Welcome to WPVM 103.7 FM, the voice of Asheville. You are tuned into Spirituality and Stuff, a show to discuss all things spiritual. My name is Summer Zachary, and I'm your host. I'm a professional tarot card reader, and you can find out more about my healing services by checking out my website, www.nourishedrootshealing.com. My website is also where you can find the archived episodes of Spirituality and Stuff. I'm here in the studio with Asia Suler, a local Asheville herbalist and energy healer. She is the owner of One Willow Apothecaries, where she grows and wildcrafts many of the ingredients for her handmade herbal tinctures, plant spirit medicines, and gem elixirs. Asia and I are both survivors of chronic health conditions. I have an autoimmune disorder called idiopathic transverse myelitis, and Asia has been diagnosed with Lyme disease and has since healed it. Tonight, we're going to discuss our healing journeys and how we came to realize that our diseases were in fact messages from our intuition and spirit to live more in alignment with our authentic selves and true life path. Both of our health crises inspired us to create businesses where we could help and heal other people. Do you want to say hi? Yeah, thank you. So as a disclaimer, I want to say that I still really wrestle with the ideas of karma and fate. And I'd never really tell anyone that an event occurred in their life for a specific reason. I'm simply sharing the way that I personally have made sense of tragedy in my life. And now that I've gotten that out of the way, I want to share a little bit about my health crisis. Before the onset of my autoimmune disorder, I often had mysterious medical issues that would pop up once in a while. However, no one could have predicted the magnitude of the crisis to come. One night, I went to bed with a very painful backache. The next morning, I woke up paralyzed from the waist down. I literally could not walk. It was an absolute shock to have doctors tell me that they didn't know if I was going to ever be able to walk normally again. After dozens of tests, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder called idiopathic transverse myelitis. I had to relearn how to walk again, and many of my most basic bodily functions were severely damaged. After 3 weeks, I was released back into the world to try to make sense of what had happened to me. The doctors didn't know if the paralysis episode would occur again or if I might forever need a cane. Now, 6 years later, I still have intense nerve damage from just above my hips to my toes, and I still often trip on my own 2 feet. I have intense chronic fatigue and chronic pain that still affects my daily schedule. Having a diagnosis that modern medicine cannot adequately understand has been completely unnerving. It was like I was just tossed to the wind with no hope. So Asia, can you relate to that fear and that uncertainty? And do you want to tell us a little bit about your journey with Lyme disease?
Sure, yeah, I can absolutely relate. So we decided to focus on Lyme disease in this hour together, but in our conversation before, we talked a little bit about how my entire journey into alternative healing and health began with a completely different chronic condition, chronic pelvic pain that I dealt with in my late teens and early 20s. And so I'm very familiar with that feeling of just being completely tossed to the wind. And so when I was diagnosed with Lyme disease just about 2 years ago, it was a semi-familiar feeling and instance. So I caught my Lyme disease pretty early. It was probably about 5 weeks after I had been bitten by the tick. So that's a pretty big deal with Lyme disease. Yeah, I was camping with a group of people, and about half the people actually contracted Lyme disease and got the bullseye. So I was pretty aware that that's what was happening. But when I went to go get my test, I actually ended up testing as not having Lyme disease. So if anyone's ever had Lyme disease, then you're probably pretty familiar with the fact that there's a 2 rounds of testing, the antibodies and the Western blot, and they're pretty ineffective as tests. So on a you know, medical, Western medical level, I actually was shown not to have Lyme disease. I went on to then get clinically diagnosed, and I knew that that's what was happening to me, in part because I was very familiar with my body at this point in time, having gone through years of chronic health conditions prior to this. I knew what was my norm and what wasn't, and also because some of my friends and companions had gotten Lyme disease as well. So the whole journey from start to finish really has been it's been about 2 years, and today I don't feel any of the symptoms or effects of Lyme disease. Now, with Lyme, what they say about it is that it's similar to chickenpox, that once you have it, it kind of stays in your system forever, and that ideally your immune system gets strong enough that it can kind of keep it tamped down in perpetuity. But the reality is that, you know, I went through many cycles of up and down, like you do with any sort of chronic condition, that there's good days and there's bad days. And I feel really lucky to be in a space right now where every day is pretty much a good day in terms of my health with the Lyme disease, but it certainly is a journey.
What did you do to treat it?
So I did a combination of things. I immediately went on antibiotics, and that is something I do recommend to people who get a diagnosis, to try antibiotics. Now, I also have seen a lot of people go on antibiotics for long term and not see it be all that effective. And I think it really depends on how soon you catch it, because I caught it so quickly. I did feel like the antibiotics did some help. But ultimately, I was on antibiotics for about a month, and then I switched completely to herbs. So I basically did a modified Stephen Buhner protocol. So if anyone's interested in his protocol, you can find it in his book, Healing Lyme. So I was on a modified version of his protocol, and taking pretty intensive herbs, like, you know, milliliters upon milliliters every day, way higher dosages than I've really ever taken anything before. So I was doing that, combination of that and acupuncture. I was having a lot of different symptoms. So some of the symptoms that I was experiencing were chronic fatigue, migraines, migrating muscle and nerve pain, foggy thinking, cognitive dissonance. The way I sort of put it was that my picture of the world, it was like someone had taken the same shot of the world, but pushed it slightly askew, sort of like two overlapping photographs that don't quite match. That's kind of that was my experience with it. A lot of people experience a lot of cognitive or what you might consider mental health issues on Lyme disease. So for me, that manifested as anxiety, particularly social anxiety. And I am typically someone who really enjoys gatherings and really enjoys getting together with people and chatting and meeting new people. But all of a sudden, I just kind of couldn't handle, like I couldn't deal. So I really went into hibernation mode. But it's a point I like to make, because some people who get Lyme disease might not notice other physical symptoms, but might be noticing that they're having intense anxiety and depression. Depression goes hand in hand with any sort of chronic condition. But literally with Lyme disease, within a week of infection, the spirochete, which is the ancient bacteria that causes what we know as Lyme disease, gets into your brain. So it's literally affecting your entire nervous system. And so many people will notice that they have, you know, real mental cognitive differences. So that was definitely something that I noticed. And so in that realm, I think it's incredibly important to have your rituals of self-care. So whether that's, you know, really nourishing yourself with good soup or doing your yoga. And honestly, for me, I feel like my diet, just really getting serious about eating extremely well and cutting out sugar and carbs and all of that, eating lots of leafy greens, that and yoga and deep meditation and shamanic journeying practices is really what got me to a point the first time around, where I felt like I had healed probably about, you know, 80 to 85%. And I mentioned first time around because I actually contracted Lyme disease again last June. So wow. It's been an interesting rolling journey.
So what about diet?
Yeah, so diet is huge anytime you're working with chronic conditions. A, because a lot of chronic conditions, whether it's pain or illness, go hand in hand with inflammation. Now, inflammation is not a bad thing, right? Inflammation is how our body heals something. But when you're dealing with a chronic issue and not just an acute issue, what happens is chronic inflammation, which when it gets to be an everyday kind of thing, it's sort of like being alert and on guard, right? If we do that day after day after day, if you're going to, you know, take the night watch, for example, every night, you're going to be pretty exhausted. So inflammation is kind of like our night watch. We don't really want it to be happening every single day, all day long. So diet's really important for inflammation. And even when you go to a Western allopathic doctor, if they're with it, then and you have Lyme disease, one of the first things they'll say to you about diet is to cut out gluten, soy, and dairy. So some of these really common allergens. So for me, I actually didn't really already eat those foods. First time around when I was dealing with chronic pain, I figured out that I have very high sensitivity to gluten. Mm-hmm. So when I cut that out, it kind of revolutionized what I had been experiencing before. So this time around, I kind of already knew the path, which is really important because a lot of times when people tell you to eat healthier, eat better, you're like, well, what does that even mean? Yeah. I don't really even know to begin with that. So for me, what that looked like was really having the basis of my diet be good organic grass-fed meat and organic vegetables. So getting lots of leafy greens in there, high quality meats, and bone broth. Because at that point in time, the first time I contracted Lyme, it was the winter time is when I was experiencing sort of the worst of it.
I went gluten-free about a year ago and had some really great effects. I used to have lots of unexplainable symptoms that I forgot about once I went on the diet. And then recently in the last few months, my diet has sort of slipped. The other day, I felt this sort of slight pinching sensation above my shoulder. It sort of felt like a pinched nerve. And by the end of the day, the skin on the whole right side of my body was extremely sensitive to even the slightest touch. So even wearing clothes was painful. And I remember that symptom, as well as others such as extreme itching happening all the time when I ate gluten, dairy, and sugar. And now as long as I stick with the diet, they've ceased. And I've learned that itching and like different skin reactions that I have are due to inflammation. Did you tell us about specific herbs that it helped you?
Yeah, so on a physical level, in terms of tinctures, sort of my mainstays were taking cat's claw, which comes from south of the equator, so it's not local to this area. Cat's claw, Japanese knotweed, which actually is an invasive plant here, so you can find Japanese knotweed in our area, and teasel. So teasel is one that's not a part of Stephen Buhner's protocol, but is something that's really highly recommended by Matthew Wood as an herbalist who is more local to the area where I contracted Lyme disease. So I really believe in treating disease as much as you can bioregionally. So I was actually on Stephen Buhner's modified protocol with the two big anti-spirochete herbs being cat's claw and Japanese knotweed for several months before I added in teasel. And teasel was a big game changer for me. And I do think part of that is the bioregional aspect of really just treating any disease or health condition. So those were some of the big ones. In terms of flower essences, I worked a lot with self-heal flower essence, and this is a flower essence that I work a lot with in general. I consider it a potentiator, so I actually put it in many of my formulas to help them be more successful and to help the different elements, disparate elements of a formula work together well. So really the key to this flower essence is right there in its name, that it really emboldens us to remember that we have always the possibility to heal. And I think you had mentioned in your intro this feeling of hopelessness. That feeling itself kind of kills us in a day-to-day kind of way when you're dealing with a chronic health condition, just feeling like there's nothing you could possibly do or there's no light at the end of the tunnel. So just even having that energetic dosage of, yeah, it's possible. Like it is possible to heal. And not only is it possible, but that healing ultimately is going to come from within.
Yeah, definitely. That's been my experience with self-heal. And it's interesting that you're talking about using herbs that appear around you, because I was camping for a summer and I moved my tent and realized that I was sleeping on a patch of self-heal, and it had been the herb that I had just been working with and just learned how to identify. And to me, self-heal is really about self-reliance, knowing that maybe no one else is going to be able to help you get through your condition, or maybe no one else understands it, and sometimes you've got to sort of do it on your own. But it's an empowering herb. It, you know, gives me the sense that I can do whatever I need to do to make things work. So what kind of shamanic work or emotional healing work did you do to sort of help you get through all this?
A lot.
Yep.
Yeah, as I mentioned, so what began my whole foray into alternative medicine was about 5 years of chronic pelvic pain. And one of the things that really helped me in that experience and ultimately was a big part of my healing was the recognition that I felt that that experience was manifesting for me in order for me to learn, that it was ultimately coming from a deep place of benevolence so that mm-hmm. I could readjust in my life, process old trauma, and really be initiated into, you know, another realm of being. So, you know, when this came up for me with Lyme disease, I knew immediately, I was like, all right, Asia, let's drop on in. So I immediately started dropping into it, you know, what is it that I can do to help myself to understand why this is happening? So you had mentioned this idea of empowerment, and I think this is so important with any health conditions, but especially when it's chronic health conditions, that we feel empowered. Mm-hmm. And the idea that there could possibly be a meaning behind this, that there's possibly, this could be coming from a place of deeper need of balance, and it's coming from a source of benevolence, to me, is
instead
a form of
punishment.
Empowerment. Instead of punishment. Yeah, that this is a form of empowerment. And, you know, of course, for a long time when I went through prior health struggles, I felt just completely let down and victimized by life. And I realized after a while that that was actually just sort of dragging me through the mud, and it sucked. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to feel like I had no power anymore. So I just decided to not feel that way and to start feeling like there's something that I could do and believing that it's possible. And so this time around, I'm like, okay, you know, Asia, let's drop in and see what's here, right? Because even if you are of the belief that there isn't necessarily a meaning to it, if you can find even just a reason why, like, okay, I hurt right now because maybe I am, you know, don't do well on gluten and I ate gluten, and mm-hmm. okay, here we go, I can make a connection. It sort of takes a little bit of that load off of you. It's mm-hmm. like you're carrying around all of this weight, like as if it's all your responsibility, which in many terms means it's all your fault, right?
Right.
So you can take that off of you a little bit when you can make these connections to things that are really actually helpful for you. So my practice with Lyme disease was one of, like I mentioned, meditation and shamanic work. And what the first time I ran a contracted Lyme disease, what really got me to a place where I could function again, because I was basically not functioning for mm-hmm. about 5 months, was I actually took a month off. I was still working at that point in time, but basically I took a month off of everything else. So everything I could possibly else say no to, I did. And I, you know, had a super strict diet, no sugar, no gluten, no dairy. I think I did no grains except for some wild rice that I had harvested myself. And I did 2 hours of meditation and journey work every day. So I'm a Reiki practitioner, so I was giving myself Reiki during that time. I was just emptying my mind and allowing myself to feel into my body, which I think is really important, just opening these channels of communication with ourselves. And then at the start of this month, I did a shamanic journey, and it's actually fairly simple to do a shamanic journey. If anyone's interested in this kind of work, I really highly recommend Sandra Ingerman and her book. She has some really lovely guides to how to start journeying, and some drumming CDs to help you, drumming being basically a very old technique for shifting our brainwave state so we can enter into a more meditative space. At the beginning of this month, I did a journey, and I basically was shown, if you've ever done journey work before, it's kind of like a daydream. I was kind of shown what this whole process would be like throughout the month. So there were these different tasks, right? It was like very much like my own little myth that I had created for myself to be in. And so I took the whole month and I just did all of those different tasks, which is a long and very fairytale-esque story. But really, it was a beautiful story that I can inhabit. And in each time I journeyed, I was bringing back a piece of knowledge or information about a part of me that needed to be heard or integrated or sometimes even released.
That's really beautiful. I want to share some quotes. This one is from Pema Chodron. "Nothing ever goes away until it teaches us what we need to know." And then another one from Carolyn Mays. "When an illness is part of your spiritual journey, no medical intervention can heal you until your spirit has begun to make the changes that the illness was designed to inspire." So as you're talking about shamanic journeying and how much it helped you, I mean, it really seems like it was your go-to. And for me, working with my autoimmune disorder, tarot was really what I think kept me alive. I was already reading tarot a lot for myself and others, but I really delved deep into studying the themes in the Fool's Journey after my health crisis. I can literally say that the wisdom of the tarot saved my life and helped me heal more than any other remedy. The Hanged One card in the tarot describes life situations similar to health crises, the divorces, the deaths in the family, and the financial ruin. The card describes how our extenuating life situation makes us stop in our tracks without knowledge of how to continue on with life. It's situations like these that make us take serious inventory of our life. It drops us to our knees, and we have no choice but to stop doing and listen deeply to our intuition. Did you make a flower essence with Teasel?
I didn't. So at that time when I officially got Lyme disease or realized I had Lyme disease, I was no longer in the north where Teasel was growing. So I was here, and it was wintertime. So I really had to work with what I had on hand or what I could possibly get sent to me. Yeah, so at that time I didn't. I ended up working with the flower essence through, I think it was Green Hope Farms. They have a really wonderful flower essence catalog. And so I had worked with the essence in that way. And I did feel like it was really potent for me.
Beautiful. And do you make a herbal Lyme disease blend or flower essence blend?
So I don't make any, you know, one size fits all formula. I do work with people who have Lyme disease. And I'm going to tell you, I think every person really needs something different.
It's so true.
Yeah. So I don't really work with stock formulas for that or for anything really. So it really depends on the person. And a lot of that's going to be, you know, what symptoms are manifesting for you. Do you have any co-infections? So there's a lot of elements to take into account.
Yeah, definitely. And what about gem essences?
Yeah. So I love stones. I'm a really big fan of stones. And in my business, I like to say that I work with earth medicine because I work with both plants and stones. And in a lot of ways, stones are kind of the grandparents of the plants. So stones were the first real beings on this planet that then we've incorporated into our medicine practice. And the minerals that make up the stones are literally what feed and make the plants possible. So yep. One of my teachers, who is a local acupuncturist and stone medicine practitioner, Sarah Thomas, she talks about stones as being able to go really deep, that stone medicine works very slowly, but very deeply and permanently. So just like you might think about the stone in your backyard, it's once a change is made, it's really permanent. So stones like to go, in Chinese medicine, the term is to the yuan level, the deepest level of our being, this deepest level of our consciousness. So when we are working with stones, what we're doing is we're going to the immovable and we're moving it. So when I was working with Lyme disease, one stone that I worked with in particular was garnet. And garnet is local to this area. So I actually had local garnet that I had rock hounded. And what I was doing was making an elixir. So I was putting it in a glass of water overnight and drinking it first thing in the morning. And this is a really wonderful practice to use if you know you have a stone that's safe for imbibing. So not all stones are. Some stones have heavy metal content. In that case, it's really better to work with it on a vibrational level. So literally just keeping it on your being or sleeping with it underneath your pillow. But garnet is this stone of health, wealth, and prosperity in a lot of ways. It's like really getting the palace of the here and now in good shape, like getting your body in good shape, getting your finances in good shape, your relationships, like just really getting things super solid. And in Chinese medicine, garnet is considered to be a premier stone for anything that's come from the outside and lodged itself really deep inside of you, so deep that it feels like it is a part of you now, and maybe it's not able to be released. So a term for that is latency, when something goes into latency deep within your body. So it's releasing things out of this latent pattern, patterns that just become so inherent to our being that we think, oh, I might not be able to let this go. So garnet can really help us with that. So that was a big aspect of my healing was having this stone as a part of my medicine, and even in a totem sense and a talismanic sense, just having something to hold on to for comfort, for solidity, for reminding me that I have allies on this journey.
That's beautiful. So through your journey with healing your chronic health issues, were there certain belief systems that you realized that you were holding on to that were not supporting you?
Oh, absolutely. There's many.
Yep.
With Lyme disease, one of the things I came up against the most was the aspects in which I felt that I had to kind of continually be on top of my game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that came down to doing what I thought I should do. So mm-hmm. at this point, my business had already been functioning for a couple years. And I was, you know, just receiving really good feedback and was getting more opportunities. And my impetus was to say yes to everything because, you know, I'm trying to make a living. I'm trying to, you know, make my dreams possible here, and I'm getting good feedback. So, hey, I'll just say yes and yes and yes to this and that mm-hmm. opportunity. And what ended up happening with the Lyme disease was that I really actually had zero energy for doing things that I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And I think part of my belief system was that if I let myself really follow what it is I wanted to do in a day-to-day or moment kind of way, I wouldn't actually get done the things I needed to get done, that somehow the bottom would fall out of my life, and you know, I would never become successful, and I would kind of just like end up working a dead-end job, and you know, just all of the fear stories that we have, especially in this country, about really pushing and really working super hard. And I found with Lyme disease that I actually, when I did the things I wanted to do when I wanted to do them, I had energy. So if I woke up and was like, you know what, I want to actually go for like a 2-hour walk, and I want to come home and I want to write some poetry, or I want to come home and I, you know, I want to make some medicine, I would have every ounce of energy I would need for that. But if I woke up and I was like, I want to go for a 2-hour walk, and instead I'm going to answer emails for 2 hours, I would be so exhausted by that. I mean, literally, I would just immediately get a migraine and have to go lay down. I would be having aches all over my body, nerve issues. So it was really a revelation for me to be like, huh, I can do what I want to do when I want to do it. Now, of course, there's going to be times, right, when we have to take care of our children, or, you know, we really have things we have to attend to. This is the reality of life. So I'm talking about when you actually have your time, like when it's your time, what do you want to do with it? I think I was living so much in my life. I've lived so much for other people and what I thought other people wanted or needed or how I could help fill in, that I had gotten really disconnected from what it is I actually wanted. And so it was this huge day in, day out teacher of like knocking on my door, like, hey, Asia, what do you want today? And I'm like, hey, Lyme disease, I'm not sure. Let me sit right. this and figure it out. So it really helped me to realize, like, what is it that's bringing me joy in this moment? And that it's not selfish for me to take that time to really do what I want to do. And that when I do that, I have so much extra energy, creative energy, body energy, sort of psychic, spiritual energy, that I actually ended up getting more done and being more accomplished when I just gave myself the time that I needed.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So with me, I had a lot of beliefs that I needed to sort of revamp and reconfigure, and one of them is the idea that this wasn't supposed to be happening to me, and this idea that this wasn't me, you know, this health condition wasn't me, and it took a lot for me to realize, wait, this actually is happening, and you've got to accept that it is happening, and now it's time to move forward instead of being so angry about the unfairness of it all. And then for me, I really had to get rid of a lot of self-judgment. I think that people with unexplainable diseases, chronic issues, are sort of blamed in a sense in our society. Maybe we're told that we're making up our symptoms. And that just goes to show how afraid the mainstream is to sort of really look at the unknowable and for people to confront the things that they don't understand. I also really had to work a lot with the idea that resting was actually good for me and that resting wasn't actually wasting time. So what about themes? Surrender, fear, control, anxiety, denial. What kinds of themes did you encounter?
I think what you mentioned just about self-care, that was a huge, huge theme for me. Anytime you're coming into a new era of your life or starting a business like I had done, you are just pouring so much energy into that being. Really, you're creating this being when you create a business. So I basically felt like I was caretaking for this other being constantly and not caretaking for myself. And the reality is, right, that my business is myself. So yeah, self-care was huge for me, and just self-realization, right? Like taking a step back and really appreciating what it is I've created, or my gifts or talents. I think, like many people, I kind of have the ability to be like, yeah, okay, so what is it that I'm going to do next? Or, you know, what is it that I'm not? What is it that I could be? What is it that I'm growing into? So to really take time for me to reflect. And I wrote at one point during the journey about self-love a good bit as something that had kind of been this like catchphrase for me growing up. Like someone would be like, self-love. And I'd be like, oh yeah. I love myself. Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love myself. But when you really get down to it, self-love is incredible and radical. And to really be able to say that you love yourself, like you are just in love with yourself, right? Like you can put two hands over your heart and look in the mirror and say, I love you, and not feel like a fuddy-duddy. Like that is not easy. Right. And so, you know, during this journey, that was something I really worked on, self-love, like not loving myself because I'm accomplished or because I like the way I look that particular day or because other people are giving me affirmation, but really just loving myself because this is the self that I inhabit, and why not love her? And life is a completely precious thing. And so why not enjoy that while I'm loving myself? So that was definitely really huge for me, just that reflection of really being able to see and appreciate and value myself.
Yes, for sure. For me, there was a big challenge in accepting what I couldn't do and loving myself, even though I was facing these incredible challenges that were sort of what I felt at the time, insurmountable and you know, not allowing me to fulfill my dreams. You know, how do we love ourselves when we feel like we're getting in the way of ourselves?
Mm.
It's a really difficult question. And part of it is, for me, has been surrender. Just saying like, oh, well, I can't do the things I want to do. And letting go of the attachment to those things. Very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think chronic illness really asks you to let go of being the doer in some ways. And, you know, that this idea that there is this greater trend, whether you want to think about that as our body's own ability to heal, that we don't have to be fretting about it all the time, that our body does has its incredible ability to heal, or whether you want to think about it in a wider spiritual way, that there's greater divine forces looking over you, caretaking for you, a greater benevolence that you're a part of. And I think part of that surrendering is realizing that, you know, by being in yourself, you are in good hands. And I think this is one of the gifts of chronic illness, is it's very pointed and poignant, right? Like, so if you can't get out of bed for days at a time, but you can still like yourself,
yeah,
like that's pretty huge, right? Yeah. Like then you're not going to be knocked down as far if you, like, you know, someone gives you the middle finger and you're driving down the street or something like that. Yes. You know, it's like you kind of get this strength, deep strength from, yes, moving through something like this.
I have found a lot of courage and a lot of strength, and I'm constantly bewildered at how people get so irritated with the small things in life. For example, traffic. I mean, traffic can really annoy me sometimes, but it doesn't seem to annoy me to the point as it maybe annoys other people, because I've been there. I've fallen to my knees not knowing if I'm ever going to be able to walk again. And when you have that perspective, it changes things completely forever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The small things are even smaller.
Yeah, chronic illness really, it strips away all of the dross. You have no choice but to be totally just in your elementality in that moment. It literally strips away everything else. So, and the reverse of that is that when you can come back to a life of sort of more, you know, ease or frivolity, that you can just enjoy it, right? That you can enjoy the little things. Whereas I think we take the little things for granted sometimes when, you know, I mean, and sometimes not so little things like walking or not being in pain.
Right.
But when we can have those moments of grace where we can remember and experience those again, oh, what a joy they are.
Yes. I remember being in the hospital crying to my partner at the time when I woke up paralyzed and saying, everything was so perfect then, and I didn't even realize it. I didn't even realize how beautiful my life was.
Yeah, gratitude. I think in terms of tools on that topic, I think gratitude is really important. And even on the days where I felt just so sad about what was happening to me and this feeling of like, will I ever feel okay again? Because I know with Lyme disease, it's extremely hard to get rid of. I would still, every day I had a practice of going out on the back of my hill and giving gratitudes. And one of the things every day I gave gratitude for was the spirochetes in my body. I gave gratitude to them for being teachers to me, even when I didn't totally feel it, right? I still dropped into what can I be grateful for in this moment? And gratitude as a heart opener, it actually has the ability to shift our consciousness. So our heart as a center of perception in our bodies, when we give gratitude and we can open our hearts in that way, we can really come to see things in a new light. So even if it feels like a hard practice, it's really a way of opening yourself up to other possibilities and perspectives.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful way to put it. So before my health crisis, I felt like I was hiding my inner light in some way. Can you relate to that?
I can relate, not so much in that I felt like I was actively hiding the light, but that I wasn't aware of it, that I wasn't able to see it as deeply. And it's funny because especially for those of us who are really sensitive or empathic, we tend to really see light in other people, and we don't focus as much on our own light or take as much time to really see your value, appreciate that. And I think when you're going through chronic illness and you are so isolated, so anytime you're going through an intense health crisis, it's going to feel very isolating and very lonely. It's the way it goes because no one else is having that experience with you. It's just you and that experience. So when you're going through that, you really need to find your own light, because no matter how much somebody else is pouring love and light on top of you, it's sort of like no matter how many blankets you put on top of you, unless your core temperature
yes.
raises up, you're still going to be cold. So it's this process of really finding your own light, even if it's only in instances, little flecks like mica in a stream. If you can just find those little flecks or those little moments of your light, you're tapping into a much greater reality of your being. And that's one thing I'll say absolutely through chronic health conditions is that I've come closer to the reality of my being, which is pretty thrilling.
Yes, your essential nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which for all of us is really a being of great capability and beauty.
Yeah, our essential nature is not what we accomplish. It's not the car that we drive. It's not who we're dating. It's our in-breath and our out-breath.
Mm-hmm.
And our connection with
who we are,
our love that we have for other people, the love that they have for us, the connection that we feel with the earth, with plants. So even before I was paralyzed, when I first decided to go to college to be an elementary school teacher, I felt like there was a part of me that was sort of dying. I couldn't admit it to myself at the time, but I knew I wanted to be doing something more than just teaching kids. Not that that's, you know, something minimal. It's actually a very beautiful thing. But I knew there was something more that I was supposed to be doing. And working within an institution is much too restrictive for me. So later, I realized that I had relegated my true self to the shadows and I had locked it away. I didn't notice this part of me at first because she'd always been locked away. It was only my desperation, sickness, and isolation that allowed the voice to become audible. The wild part of me wants to help the world radically transform into a positive, loving place. I want to tear down oppression in every sense. Teaching in elementary school seemed like it would be helping to maintain the status quo, but I have an unquenchable lust for revolution. For example, I want to travel the world reading tarot in a gypsy caravan in the winter and live in a mud hut in the summer. I want to make costumes and collage art and sell them. I want to have a radio show. Yay, I have one. Read tarot for people at festivals. Even before the onset of my autoimmune disorder, I needed a lot more time for sleep and self-reflection. I completed tasks at a slower rate, and I have a learning disability called dyscalculia. There was a part of me that knew that I could never be healthy living a 9-to-5 lifestyle. In fact, I was already not happy living that lifestyle. I absolutely could not find the gumption to follow these gypsy dreams. My family would disown me for it. I thought that it was just foolish. I began to believe that there was just no way to live the life I wanted and that I should just settle for financial stability. I was settling, and my intuition knew it. The autoimmune disorder literally destroyed my ability to work normal jobs, and my identity started to crumble. It stopped me in my tracks. I realized that there was no way in which I could work a 50 or 60 hour week. I would have to find something else to do. I felt totally depressed and basically suicidal for a few years. What was I doing with my life? As those first few years after my temporary paralysis dragged on, the whispers of my authentic self became more and more audible. The voice said, "Why not just try to live more in line with your deepest dreams? You might as well. This disease has destroyed your career opportunities and you have nothing else to lose." Meanwhile, my intuition and my ability to counsel others vastly increased, and I fell more in love with the tarot and all things metaphysical. I began to feel more and more drained working with kids. I'd already been doing it for 10 years. I finally had to admit to myself that I was burnt out. On the flip side, I had started putting myself out there more as a tarot reader and artist with increasing success. Have you had any similar experiences to that?
Yeah, you know, with the Lyme disease, for me, the part of me that had been dying, that was knocking at the door, was my writer self. It was my writing. And that's still something I'm really working on inviting more and more and more into my life. But writing had been a huge part of my life growing up, especially my teenage years and in college as well. It was a huge part of my existence, to the point where for a while I thought that that's what I was going to do with my life, was to write. And just like a lot of writers experience, just being in a lot of different workshops, settings, I kind of feel like, you know, like Billy Collins says, like sort of like the love of it was beat out of me, like with a hose, like what we do to poetry to find out what it really means. And I moved down to Asheville very sort of serious in an academic way about studying herbs. And I really let writing fall by the wayside. And a lot of that came down to not feeling enough with what I was writing, that what I was writing wasn't new enough, brilliant enough, pretty enough, smart enough. I'm sure some people who might be listening to this right now maybe read my blog and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I would have no idea that she would have ever felt that way about her writing." But I really did. I think I just really felt like, what was the point if it wasn't like perfect in the way I was thinking about perfect at that time? And I had really forgotten that writing was this way for me to be in communication with myself, and that's ultimately why I want to do it, is because it maintains this level of contact with my inner self and with the inner self of the world. Like, this is the way in which I keep tabs on and communicate with the deeper reality of the world around me. So when I got Lyme disease, I found that all I really wanted to do was write, and I wanted to write a lot. And I, at the time, I had a really sort of deep and prolific pen pal. And yeah, it was very sweet because it kept me on my game because I have to send a letter back, right? So and this person was a beautiful writer as well. So, you know, of course, I'm trying to just really write something that is capturing how I'm feeling and is evocative of my day to day. And it really it completely blasted open this aspect of me that it really is a writer, and to be able to say that about myself and to recognize that I need this for my healing, that mm-hmm. that my art and your art, it's very important that it has nothing really to do with how it's received or where
how good it is.
How good
it's
it
the
is.
Process.
No, yeah. I just read Elizabeth Gilbert's new book, Big Magic, and she said, you know, I promised the universe I'd be a writer. I'd never promised I'd be a good writer. And I love that, right? Because it's like good is really whatever someone else thinks of as good. So for me, it was letting go of those labels and just letting myself create and get in touch with that aspect of myself that had been dying. But like, you know, Pema Chodron, you had said, like, just, you know, literally that the illness would not go away until I had paid attention to that. That's part of what I wanted to do that I had really stuffed away.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I feel similarly.
That's a hard one.
With writing as well. When I write, I'm pulling out rocks out of my psyche that when they're out, I'm more light.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, the more I allowed myself to do what I was most passionate about, the less physical pain I felt and the more energy I had. The more I allowed myself the expression of my authentic self, the more peaceful and happy I felt. Following my intuition was healing me. I'm still on this path of doing what I most want to do with my life as much as possible. It's more healing than any herbal medicine I could have ever taken. I believe that my paralysis occurred to stop me in my tracks and to envision a new life for myself. I would have never been able to do this without the wisdom of the Hanged One tarot card, the wisdom that says tragedy is your teacher and can show you how to heal. So for more about my health crisis within the context of specific tarot cards, you can check out my episode about health crises and tarot on my website, nourishedrootshealing.com. So today I still suffer from intense side effects from the transverse myelitis that regularly interfere with my life. However, I've tapped into a very deep joy within me and my passion for costume making, running a business, reading tarot, and writing. It's ignited a fire within me that no depression can dampen. I think I'm happier being a gypsy than I could have ever been as a school teacher, despite the financial instability and the tenuous relationships I have with family members that want me to pursue a more mainstream path. I can honestly say that I'm thankful and grateful for my autoimmune disorder. It has helped me really feel closer to spirit, my own intuition, and other people. I would never be the healer I am today without these intense experiences. So what about you? Do you think that you would be as qualified as you are now to teach and do consultations if you had not gone through such a huge health crisis?
Well, I think qualified is an interesting word.
Yeah.
One that maybe I have some resistance to, but I think any experience you go through that really helps you to be more of a human helps you to also be a better teacher and facilitator and just a better listener in general. And I teach from experience, so mm-hmm. Anytime I've had a really intense experience, there is another part of me that it's kind of a release to think about. That's like, oh, cool. You're really going to be able to understand what it's like when you work with someone who has Lyme disease now, or you're really going to understand what it's like when, you know, one of your family members goes through an intense, debilitating health crisis. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to understand other
and
people's
experiences.
And relate
to other people.
It's huge. Yeah. And so, you know, one of my teachers here in town, Juliet Blankespoor of the Chestnut School, she was my main herbal teacher. When I first started teaching, I remember sort of telling her I was, you know, nervous about it. And yeah, I was so young. I think I was, you know, maybe 24 or something when I first started teaching. And I And I said this to her, and she was like, you know, as long as people are learning, that's what matters, right? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, what I feel my job is as a teacher facilitator is to just open doors to people's own inner teachers. And by going through these health crises, I really had to find my own inner teacher, that part of me that was really trying to communicate to me and help me to learn and heal. And so in that way, I think I've found a pretty good path to my inner teacher. And I'm really passionate about just giving people lanterns to find theirs.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you offer in your business?
Sure. So my business is called One Willow Apothecaries, and that's herbal and earth medicine. So I work with flower essences and gem elixirs and limited edition creations. And so in terms of that aspect of the business, I sell both online and in some local stores here, including Little Volcano and Villagers. And I also teach and do consultation work. So consultations I do on a one-on-one basis, both health consultations and more of intuitive readings and on-the-body treatments with Reiki and stones. And teaching, actually, I have a really exciting event happening in my life, which is that I'm just opening a new teaching space. So that's
awesome.
Yeah, it's in downtown Marshall on the island, which was the old high school for mm-hmm. Madison County, which is pretty cool. And so that is opening this winter. And the first class there will be on December 20th. It's called Bright Night Solstice Ritual and Craft. So that's really focusing on this time of light in the darkness and the profundity and the historical ritual surrounding this period of time, this really beautiful opening mystical period of solstice time, and sort of getting in touch with ourselves before the deep plunge of winter. And so past few years I've done this pairing of both doing this ritual class and also doing a class on the other aspect of the holiday season, which is the celebratory fizzy drinks aspect. So that class is happening at Villagers. It's called Holiday Magic and Medicine Making, and as of right now it's actually sold out. So you could get your name on the waiting list if you're interested. So those two classes are ones I'm really excited to teach every holiday time, and they really are an initiation into this wintertime series that I do called Winter Intuition School. So that's a 10-week program, six Saturdays every other Saturday through the winter months, and it's a container for people to be going deep into the real theme and what I see to be opportunity of wintertime to get in touch with our inner selves, to do this inner alchemy, inner work. So we focus on shamanic journey work, stones, dream work, past life recall, flower essence, plant spirit medicine, and conscious fasting and cleansing. So these are all topics that we cover throughout the wintertime and are really just in support of one another as we go through this deep process of winter. And Summer and I had talked about before the call started about this idea of winter being this death, mm-hmm. and what can happen, what magic can happen when we embrace that death, which really is just another way of saying that we're shedding aspects of ourselves that no longer work and getting in touch with that mystery, that divine. Yeah. That's truly what death is. And so this class series is a way of really diving into that.
Yeah. In my other episode, Tarot and Health Crisis, I really delve into those topics of death and health crises as initiation. And again, those themes are, I think, really what saved me. So what about websites?
Yeah, sure.
Instagram. Tell us everything.
Okay. So I like to share a lot of content and insights, meditations, etc. on my social media. So I have an Instagram account, and that's One Willow Apothecaries. And I also have a Facebook with similar content. So those are two really good ways to connect. I also, of course, have a website. So the website is my business name. It's just One Willow Apothecaries, and that one is spelled out one.com. And I also have my blog. So if all my talk about writing is interesting, you're like, what is this lady about? You can go check out my writing there. And the blog is called Wool Gathering, which is another term for daydreaming, mm-hmm. and wildcrafting. And you can find that through the website as well.
Wool Gathering and Wildcrafting.
Mm, yeah.
That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
So what's the inspiration behind One Willow Apothecaries? What's the name about?
Yeah, so it was named for the first plant I really ever connected with, which was this willow tree that was planted for me when I was born. It was a weeping willow tree in the backyard, and I have so many beautiful, vivid memories of going out there and climbing up into her branches and writing poetry and reading, and
aww.
I felt like when I was inside that tree, which it was really an inside because it was her branches created this skirt, that I was really in another world. And even though I wasn't raised necessarily with the belief that consciousness animates the natural world, I remember feeling it very strongly when I was with that tree. And so I wanted to pay homage to that tree, but in the term of one willow, the one aspect of it is I really wanted to pay homage to the power and medicine of the individual, this idea mm-hmm. that every single tree, every single person is incredibly important and has and carries their own inherent medicine that not only has the ability to heal them, but heal the world as well.
That's beautiful. I similarly love the number one, you know, with numerology and tarot. I love the aces, because the aces to me seem so powerful, even though they're just like seeds or blessings, but it just seems like the whole world is present there in that single ace. There's a promise of new life there. It's awesome. All right, everybody, you've been listening to WPVM 103.7 FM. This is Spirituality and Stuff, and I am your host, Summer Zachary. You can check out my website, www.nourishedrootshealing.com. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you on the flip side.